Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Medicaid Leadership Exchange, a podcast series that explores priority topics with Medicaid leaders. My name is Hillary Kennedy, and I'm Program Director for Medicaid Leadership at the National Association of Medicaid Directors. NAMD is excited to work on this podcast series with the Center for Healthcare Strategies. It is made possible by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. As we launch new episodes of the podcast, we're continuing to feature conversations between Medicaid directors and sometimes members of their executive teams. We're looking forward to our upcoming discussions, which we're organizing as a mini-series looking at a variety of leadership dynamics at play for directors and their senior teams as they work to address equity, both within their agencies and for their members. I'd like to introduce the moderator for today's session, Gretchen Hammer. Gretchen works with NAMD as a senior strategic advisor, working with states in a variety of ways to support their strategic planning and operational goals. Gretchen most recently was the Medicaid director in Colorado and also served on the NAMD board of directors. With that, I'll turn it over to Gretchen to say a few words and welcome today's conversation participants.
Terrific. Well, hello to everyone, and it's nice to be back on the podcast and very excited about this conversation. We are going to focus on vaccine equity strategies, which is the topic of the day on many Medicaid leaders and state leaders' agendas. And so very much looking forward to talking with Lynette Rhodes and Cindy Bean. Lynette is the Medicaid director in the state of Georgia, and Cindy Bean is the Medicaid director in the state of West Virginia. So we have two nationally recognized experts in their field and on this topic, and we're very excited to dig in. So with that, Lynette, I'll let you introduce yourself, and then Cindy, you can introduce yourself just so listeners can hear your voices, and then we'll dive into the content.
Sure, thank you. Good afternoon or good morning, I guess, depending on where you are. My name is Lynette Rhodes. I am the Executive Director over the Medical Assistance Plans Division with the Department of Community Health in Atlanta. And I have under my purview all of Medicaid operations, policy, regulatory, service administration, and enrollment for members, as well as providers, and of course, quality. I've been with the department now for 15 years, I think, yeah, in different capacities. So again, enjoy public service, but thank you, Gretchen, for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Cindy.
Hi, I'm Cindy Bean. I'm the Medicaid director here in the state of West Virginia. I've been the commissioner here for about 6 years, been with the Medicaid department for 15 years in total. And really, it's an exciting job. And Medicaid is roughly about a third of our population here in West Virginia. So has a large footprint of our population health. And West Virginia is very excited about all of our services that we're providing through our Medicaid program.
Terrific. So as many of you all know listening to this podcast, Medicaid programs have been on the front line of responding to COVID-19, both as we adjusted services to members who were infected with COVID-19, but also as we supported members to continue to access services, providers to stay afloat and continue to modify the way they provided services, given some of the social distancing requirements, et cetera. The scientific feat of having available vaccines has created yet another opportunity for Medicaid programs to continue to respond to the COVID pandemic. And the programs have been working hard in partnership with their departments of public health, their governors, to ensure access to the vaccine for Medicaid-enrolled populations. Early on in the pandemic, when the focus was on the elderly, that was certainly a role for those who are duly enrolled in Medicaid and Medicare. But now that states are opening up to broad populations, young adults, essential workers, et cetera, Medicaid is playing a larger and larger role in ensuring access to vaccines for Medicaid enrollees. So today we're really going to focus on how Georgia and West Virginia have navigated the tension between opening up the vaccine to broader populations and ensuring access for populations that may have been marginalized in the past, may have vaccine hesitancy, or may need some additional supports to access the vaccine. Individuals with disabilities, individuals living in rural communities, and racially and ethnically diverse communities who may have their own set of challenges in accessing the vaccine. So that's really where we wanted to start And if you don't mind, Lynette, I'll start with you just for a quick update on, you know, how things are going and what you're experiencing in Georgia as you've been working to ensure that Medicaid members have access to the vaccine.
Sure. So it's going well in Georgia. You know, we started out a little slow, I would say, probably as many of the states did. And that had to do with the limited supply of vaccine that was available. You know, in Georgia, as far as the Medicaid program is concerned, we serve 2.3 million members. So that's quite a large segment of our population in Georgia. And so, of course, the concern is making sure that you have enough supply to be able to meet the need. You know, and then, of course, access, you know, to appointments and making sure that folks can get in to get the vaccine. I would say, you know, vaccine hesitancy has played a huge role in terms of how we have been able to administer the vaccine, particularly to minority communities, African Americans, Latinos, and Hispanics, and then, you know, things like non-emergency transportation. So all of that plays a role in terms of how, you know, the vaccine gets administered. In Georgia, the Department of Public Health is leading the effort in terms of rolling out the plan for Georgia. And so we have to collaborate very closely with them to make sure that we can administer the vaccine.
Great, thank you. Cindy, maybe an update from you and then we can dig into a little some of the issues you raised, Lynette.
Sure. So West Virginia, we actually at the beginning did a really, really excellent job about getting, as the governor would say, shots in arms. We had the Save Our Wisdom Project and really targeted the nursing facilities like most states and our elderly. And as it's broadened out, we have been successful in basically getting those individuals that, you know, want the shot or demanding the shot, have a centralized system to schedule appointments. So that was happening, but like every state, there was limited supply. And so we're just now getting to the point where there's enough supply to really meet the demand. And now we're to the point of actually targeting those individuals that, like Lynette was saying, that have hesitancy towards the vaccine, making sure we're educating about the vaccine. In addition, targeting our youth, we have our high schools open and going into the school system, getting those individuals vaccinated. We did a really good job before opening the schools of prioritizing all the teachers, but the students, of course, were not vaccinated. And then also one of the areas that Medicaid has played a key role in is our individuals with disabilities, because we know where all of our home and community-based services are, where those members are, and homebound members. So initially, West Virginia has our vaccine rollout centralized through public health partnership, along with a lot of state agencies, including Medicaid and our National Guard. So we have those command calls every day, and they get information from us, like where are your homebound, and so we can do those outreach and connect them to outreach workers.
Great. So maybe either one of you can answer this question. What have you found to be the most important sort of programmatic things that you've done as a Medicaid program to support members to get connected? Certainly there has been limited supply, accessing the technology systems to get a vaccine appointment can be a challenge, you know, then the actual act of getting there. Just as you all reflect on where you've had some success, specifically on behalf of Medicaid members, what would you say have been your successes and how did they come about?
So for West Virginia, I think that the main thing is for Medicaid to have the seat at the table. And so I think it's really important for Medicaid to be in, partnering with your public health and partnering with whoever your state is usually using for rollout because a lot of times people think of your traditional medical services, your nursing homes and your home health agencies. They don't realize, unless they're kind of in deep with Medicaid, that there's all these waiver programs and additional programming out there. And those populations can really be forgotten if Medicaid's not sitting at the table advocating for those populations. So I know when I brought up, you know, what about our age and disabled waiver folks? People were like, some people were like, well, how many people is that? And that, thinking it was a small population. Well, that's larger than our nursing home population. Right. So it's a very interesting, as Medicaid directors, we're in so deep in our populations, we think everybody knows about these programs. And sometimes that's not necessarily the case.
Lynette?
Yeah, I would agree with Cindy on all of those points. And exact same thing here. Again, collaborating with the other state agencies is critical, as well as making sure that we're serving, you know, all of our members. You know, we tend to think, you know, to Cindy's point, you know, well, everyone's ambulatory and everyone can get to a mass vaccination site, when in fact, that's not the case. You do have some members who are homebound. And so that was one of the things that we had to work on as well. And that was making sure that those individuals who are in our home and community-based service waivers are receiving vaccine as well. I would say one of the really critical things that we were able to set up, and Cindy touched upon this as well, is setting up some type of centralized system where people can schedule appointments. And so we actually did set up, it's called myvaccinegeorgia.com, where you can actually go in and pre-register for an appointment. And the way that system works is once the appointment becomes available, then that member is notified, you know, that, hey, now we have appointments available. Does this work for you? And so that has helped a lot. I think in the beginning, we kind of struggled with that. And that was just because of the sheer volume of people attempting to make appointments, you know, at one time. So that has been a big help, as well as communications, Gretchen. I think that's a critical component in all of this, is making sure that we as the Medicaid agency are communicating out to our members, you know, what's happening, where can they get the vaccine, you know, what do they need to do to get it? Can they schedule transportation to get it, you know, if that's needed? So those are some of the critical things.
Great. And I was going to ask about that communications. And I think what you just described, Lynette, is how important it is to communicate the logistics, as you just said. How can you get there? Where can you get an appointment? But both of you in your opening comments referenced those individuals who may have some hesitancy about getting the vaccine.
Yeah.
For historic reasons, for personal reasons, for whatever reason it may be, how have you all tried to communicate about the importance or the safety or the long-term benefit of vaccines in addition to those very critical sort of logistics, if you will?
Yeah, I think I'll kind of start with that one. I think that's a great question. For me, I think the critical component is addressing it. And so in Georgia, I can say that our governor has done an excellent job of getting out and bringing that issue to the forefront. So in press releases, you know, regular news reports, that's something that you hear about often. You know, we want to make sure that people are aware of the importance of getting the vaccine. I think the next thing for us was making sure that we made the vaccine available in those communities where you have minorities or rural areas of the state. And so opening up, you know, vaccination sites in those areas, you know, the public health departments and those types of things to make it more available. So I would say those were some of the critical things that we had to do.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, and I would also agree with everything Lynette has just talked about. I think a couple things have helped us in West Virginia. You know, the Appalachian culture, you really trust your neighbors. You trust the people in your community. And so what we've tried to do is outreach to churches. We've had vaccine drives in churches with the pastor and people helping us. And so I think that has helped tremendously in some of our more rural communities and communities that have had some hesitancy. And again, our governor has been, he's a very outspoken governor and talks in a way that I think he was quoted in the national news saying, come on, get your vaccine and you're not going to grow an antler. I mean, this really talking like, of course you want a vaccine and making sure that that's communicated to everyone in West Virginia. So I think that's helped. We've had an initial, like I said, a really strong uptake, but we are to the point of really working on this particular issue, because now that we have the supply, we want to make sure we get as many, quote, shots in arms as we can.
Yeah, terrific. As you all reflect on being the leaders for your organization, and Cindy, I think you articulated the need, part of your leadership role has been to inform people about Medicaid enrollees and to advocate for their inclusion in all of your plans. But as you think about the last couple of months where you've been really focused on this vaccine issue, what have been some of the leadership challenges or your strengths as a leader that you've really relied on that you would share with your fellow colleagues?
I think for me, the strength is, I feel that in my role, and it's where I've been around, I have a lot of partners and I collaborate with a lot of people before the pandemic, and already had some relationships with public health, already had some relationships with our behavioral health bureaus and some of the other bureaus that have really played a critical role in the vaccine rollout. That has definitely been the strength. The learning curve was the logistics part. For me, we have access standards and things with our MCOs, but actual logistics of shipment to when it's delivered and the additional logistics of not having supplies and things like that in the beginning, that has definitely been a learning curve and something that I think that I've learned a lot about how things are deployed in an emergency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And I would say for me, it's been the need for speed. That's the best way that I can describe it. And by that, I mean keeping up with the changes. Because this has been, you know, it's things move very rapidly, particularly as it relates to the vaccine. And so, you know, you're rolling out communications, but, you know, those things can change. You know, the population of people that are eligible changes, the, you know, reimbursement rate for administration changes. Mm-hmm. You know, this morning, you know, I saw the article from the CDC and the FDA about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, what do we need to, you know, what updates do we need to make in terms of our communications? Do we make updates or do we wait and see what's going to happen tomorrow? And if so, you know, how do we collaborate with the Department of Public Health? So I would say that's the most challenging part. You know, as Medicaid directors, we're used to having to work quickly. I think with this particular situation, it's the collaboration with multiple agencies and the quick turnaround, I think, mm-hmm. even more challenging.
Yeah. And it just shows the depth that a Medicaid director must have in terms of her leadership capacities, right? To have the kind of relationships you were talking about, Cindy, to attend to those things, and then to get all the way down in the weeds on, like, when is the National Guard coming and how are we going to get our homebound folks, you know, what they need to then new data, how do we shift, right? That the ability to flex across those leadership skills is just remarkable. So I guess that was the last thing I was going to ask, you know, as you all think about your experiences as a leader and your lessons learned, is there anything else that you would share with your fellow colleagues or those who are still trying to reach out to populations that maybe you all have successfully reached out to? You know, as we continue to navigate this vaccine, I think once we get to young children, whenever that is, Medicaid is obviously going to have a critical role to play because Medicaid insures so many children across this country. You know, as you look ahead, or as you were to offer advice to others about an equitable vaccine response or continuing to be a good partner with your public health colleagues, what would be the one or two lessons that you would share or pieces of wisdom?
Well, I would, this kind of coincide with Lynette there, that speed and that need for speed. I mean, all these changes came at us with a fire hose, and we adapted. Medicaid leaders, I think, across the country, this, you know, we were changing policies, you know, in an hour, not even a day. And one of the lessons learned that I've recognized is, you know, for example, some of the telehealth policies and things to outreach would have taken us months, you know, to really make some significant changes. We did them fairly quickly and they worked out. Sometimes we don't need to analyze everything forever to make sure it's perfect before we release it. So I think that is one of the lessons learned from all of this. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing is really utilize the resources that we have. You know, we have, West Virginia is a largely managed care state. Engage those managed care companies and those care managers to reach out as well. I mean, if you think about Medicaid programs, we have lots of contractors, lots of tentacles that can be out there working and diversely in the population and things that they might not normally do, and to say, hey, we got vaccine clinics here and doing all those things. So I think that's important as well. Just use everything at your fingertips to work on the single goal.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And I would add, you know, in terms of the resources, your external stakeholders, because they can definitely give you a lot of insight in terms of what's happening, you know, on the ground. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes you need that. You need to hear from your external stakeholders, your provider associations, your providers, to know what's going on out there in the community and where are any, you know, gaps or, you know, areas where you might not have direct insight into. I think that's critical. And I also think, I agree with Cindy 100% on not overanalyzing every little thing. For some things, you know, make the system changes, make the edits, and you got to run with it. And if you find that there are some glitches, you know, we can fix those and make corrections and keep it moving. So, yeah.
Terrific. Well, we are coming to the end of our time. And as part of the end of each of these podcasts, we're happy to have Mark Larson from the Center for Healthcare Strategies take a moment to summarize all of the amazing things that we've just talked about and learned and put them into context of the leadership opportunities. So Mark, I'll turn it over to you to close out our podcast.
Gretchen, thank you. And Lynette and Cindy, we're so grateful for you spending some time on this podcast and sharing a bit about your experience and your observations of what has been, you know, an unprecedented challenging year. And I would probably be remiss not to say thank you to you and your team. We're mindful that the last year has really reinforced the significance of public service and the role of public servants. And we appreciate that all of what you and your teams have done has come in the context of also not being able to go to your offices and having to work in a virtual setting. And I think it's the adaptability that you both talked about. It really, for me, is kind of striking that you are able to accomplish all that you have while also having the sort of the sand shifting under your feet all the time. And we know that Medicaid directors and Medicaid leaders are always nimble in that way, but Gretchen, you talked about the depth of the leadership challenge of the last year, and that's what I'm left with as an observation from hearing the two of you. It always seems to stand out that the leadership component of this work is never all one thing or another. It's the combination of them. And you both touched on sort of the technical stuff, the supply chain, the setting up an application system, those sort of really logistical-y things. But at the same time, the relationship piece really stands out. That notion that, Medicaid, even with all of its breadth, it isn't enough. It doesn't have all the answers. And the significance of the investment in the partnerships and the relationships with public health and so many other state and federal agencies. And then I think you both in different ways mentioned the importance of just knowing who you serve and the important role that Medicaid programs play. And I think Medicaid means a lot of things to a lot of people, and rarely do folks see it in its totality. And I appreciate your challenge of having to kind of use that vision of who you serve and communities that they are involved with to make sure nobody gets left behind. And when we bring it back to that notion of how do you really think about equity, it reminds me of the important role that Medicaid plays just as in its existence, but also in your leadership in remembering how to use those connections to make sure that everybody gets safe and is able to stay healthy despite the pandemic. So, that combination of there's the technical stuff, but on its own, that's not enough. The relationship stuff, which is important, but then also just the not losing sight of the big picture of where Medicaid fits in and who it serves. So I'm really touched by the way in which you drew all of those pieces together.
Great. Thanks, Mark, as always, for your amazing summaries. Hillary, I'll turn it back over to you to close out our podcast.
Thanks, Gretchen. And thank you to Lynette and Cindy and Mark for all of your thoughtful remarks during the conversation today. I hope that everybody listening found it as valuable as I did. And please subscribe to these podcasts, Medicaid Leadership Exchange, on the Apple Podcast Store, or keep an eye out for future podcasts to be posted to the NAMD and CHCS websites. We're looking forward to our next conversation. Thanks, everyone.